Welcome to the Pro Cheerleading Podcast. This is the only podcast that gives you a raw and unfiltered perspective of what it's really like to be a professional cheerleader. Whether you're currently on a pro team, an alumni, or really curious about what it takes to become a pro cheerleader, the Pro Cheerleading Podcast gives you all the inside scoop and hot topics in the pro cheerleading industry and in-depth interviews of current and former cheerleaders. I'm your host, Makiba. Join me every Wednesday as I reveal the truth behind the palms.
Hi, gorgeous. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm so excited. Do you have your little one?
Yes, he's sitting right here.
Oh my goodness. So what's his name and how old is he?
His name is Legacy. He'll be 3 months next Tuesday.
Oh my God. I didn't realize it was that recent. Oh my goodness. Little. Okay. I'm a baby. I'm that person. I'm a baby magnet. So we're going to leave him alone and let him chill. So everybody, I'm super pumped. Today we have a very, very iconic dancer in my mind. She has been, I don't know, like the face to me of Brooklyn Nets for so long. I have Celine Boom Edmondson, and we're going to get the meaning behind the name Boom as soon as we can, because I'm dying to know. But Celine has been part of the Brooklyn Nets for 9 years, 7 years as a dancer, 2 years as assistant coach. And I just want to welcome you, Celine, to the Pro Cheerleading Podcast. I cannot wait to get into all the conversations that we're about to have today.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Makiba. I'm really, really excited.
Good, good, good. Okay. Give me the background on Boom. I just have to know. How did you get that nickname? What does it mean? All of the things.
So I started dancing when I was 12 years old. And when I turned 14, I believe, is when I joined a hip hop company called Double Up Dance Company in Connecticut with my mentors, Paul and Brian Herman. And they were starting like their hip hop crew within the company called Team Lego. And we all got nicknames. And because I always knew the song that was playing in rehearsal or on the radio or whatever, and I always knew the lyrics, they called me like Boom, short for Boombox.
Boombox. Got you. Okay.
And because I used to hit things really, really hard. Like I had no textures. Everything was like boom, 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 boom. So that's how I got my name. Boom.
Okay. I've been dying to ask you that for the longest time, but that makes a lot of sense. So you're like a music head then. You just...
For sure.
Okay. I love it. Okay. So you said you started dancing kind of, you know, as a teenager. Tell me about your preparation to enter like the pro space as a dancer.
So I started off very technical in all my Western technique, right? Ballet, jazz, modern, because I thought that was the only way to be a professional dancer was to be in a concert dance company. And I had no idea what it meant to be a commercial dancer until I met my mentors, Paul and Brian. So I started off really late too, right? At 12 years mm-hmm. old. And I continued that technical training all the way through college. But at the same time, I started to do commercial hip hop when I was in high school, but still wanted to go the route of like, no, I'm going to be an Ailey or no, I'm going to be in complexions because I was really a bunhead. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got to college that I started taking street styles, namely house, that it really prepared me for what I'm doing now. And in college is when I was like, you know, there's really no money. No shade. There's really no money in concert dance. So, and I was like, I need to make some money. I really liked like the bright lights and things that the commercial world had to offer, especially being a hip hop dancer, right? And being like mm-hmm. behind artists. And so in college, I signed to my first agency, Clear Talent, and mm-hmm. went on all of my auditions and all of that. And my second year in college is when I auditioned for the Brooklyn Nets because one of my mentors was like, okay, you're signed. Like you need to make something shake, like go audition for the team. And okay. I was like, girl, you know, I'm girly girl. I'm not a cheerleader. I don't do that. And now here I am 9 years later.
I love it. Well, did you do a lot of jobs as a commercial dancer before you made the team with the Brooklyn Nets? You just gotten started?
Everything kind of just happened all at once. Like I got signed, had no idea what it meant to have an agent, and then auditioned for the team and became a Brooklyn Net. Like wow. all within months.
Okay, that's crazy.
So I said what I wanted and it happened.
Basically. Yeah. So tell me about your rookie year then. Was it kind of like culture shock? What was that transition like? It's a crazy world. How did you adjust to the demands of being on an NBA team?
So I think it did pretty good. I was a full-time student still at the time, right? I was going to the University of the Arts. I didn't mention that, but I was a full-time student in Philadelphia at the University
of the Arts. That's what I was going to ask you, because I was like, wait a minute, is there more than one University of the Arts? So that's in Philly.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you were commuting while you were on the team?
I was commuting
You're
from
crazy,
Philadelphia.
Zane.
Yes.
What?
Yes,
So
as
you,
a dance
so,
major. Exactly.
Wait, so you lived, did you live on Amtrak, or how are you getting back and
Yeah,
forth? That's,
basically.
oh, the
And I couldn't
Amtrak.
afford Amtrak as a college student. So I started off taking Greyhound and I was like,
Oh
okay,
my goodness.
I can't do this. And then I found New Jersey Transit and SEPTA, and they connect in Trenton.
Connected. Okay.
Yes. And so I was like, okay, this is more doable for me. And sometimes when mom and dad could throw the little cash for Amtrak is when I, you know, got the luxury
Yeah.
there.
Cool.
But yes, I lived on the train. I lived on the train. I commuted actually for my first 5 years on the team.
You're kidding.
No.
Okay. So, okay. For people who do not know, I used to live in Philly. That's where I was at for law school, and then a year or so after. But anyway, the point is, the East Coast is kind of like smashed together where you can like just dip to another place in an hour or two with the, you know, Amtrak or the bus system, train system. But you're doing this like for rehearsals. You guys know how long these rehearsals go. Like, that is crazy that you did that for so long. That is like dedication and a half. What?
Which is what leads me to how did I adjust on the team? You know, I just had my blinders on and I was super hardworking. I was the youngest on the team at that point. So I was just being a sponge and soaking everything in, being surrounded by all of these grown women who turned me from just a young girl to a young woman and now a full-blown woman. And I'm really blessed to have that experience. But as a rookie, I kept quiet. I don't think my personality really came through. And our old coach Adair used to say that all the time, like, oh, you're so quiet, you're so quiet. I'm like, girl, that's because I know my place and I'm just trying to hit the stat and know my side marks on court.
Right.
But yeah, that's how I really adjusted as a rookie. I just learned how to do my hair, do my makeup. I was not the girliest girl back then.
Okay. I love that you had a little tomboy vibe going on.
Still do.
But that's an amazing amount of dedication to balance school, to balance commuting, the crazy rehearsal schedule, which sometimes is very last minute, right? With changes and whatnot. So that's a lot to manage responsibly as a rookie, as a veteran. So when did you become captain of the team?
I became captain in my 2019 to 2020 season, which was my fourth year. Fourth
Got
season.
It. How would you describe your years on the team, either as a captain or as a dancer, like your highs and lows of being on the squad?
My years on the team, I would describe as transformational. I think I really grew every single season, every single year. And it's a testament to who I am now and will still continue to be since I am still in the space, still learning, still growing. I've always wanted to be a choreographer. And so a really big high for me was my first piece that I choreographed, which was Nuck If You Buck. And
that was you?
That was me.
Okay.
And, you know, it was just a young Celine, you know, fresh out of school, or I think I was still in school at that point. I really can't remember. But being given this opportunity because I wasn't afraid to say, hey, I would love to choreograph and I would love to take this on. And so for Adair and Christia to trust me and also my captains at the time to trust that I could deliver that was an amazing feeling. And that piece really lived on for, I want to say, 5 seasons.
I remember it.
We performed that everywhere.
I love it.
And it was also an honor because in tandem with Barclays and Brooklyn Boxing is why we had a boxing routine so that we could promote. So it was just really nice to be a connector. And that really was foreshadowing what I do now, which is connecting choreography and all of these things. So yeah. Lows, forgetting a costume, being late, missing a train because my life was so hectic, but there weren't that many lows, really. So many highs that I forget the lows.
Well, one of the things that I love when I come visit you guys is just that it's always some kind of performance by some artist during halftime. And I want to hear, just like, do you get nervous? How do you even plan and map around what you're going to do when you have a halftime performance of that magnitude? You guys were just dancing with Faith freaking Evans. And I was like, so jealous that I wasn't there for that game. Just talk to me about what your creative process is like choreographing for an artist and how you bring that to the court and how you prepare the artist for the performance with the Brooklyn Nets or the team hype in the background. I'm just dying to hear about that.
A lot of the time, there isn't a lot of preparation, especially with the artist, because for someone like Miss Faith, for example, I think she flew in from the West Coast the day of the game. And so, or no, a couple days before. So the day of the game was her first rehearsal. And so there isn't a lot of prep time with the artist, and we are kind of counting on their performance ability to just kind of melt into what we have for them. But we do, Chrissia, Asha, and I really do a good job in directing the artist when we can, when they can take good direction. But it's amazing to have the artist in rehearsal sometimes, sometimes not. It's not always good to have them in rehearsal. The preparation on our end, we get the music when we get the music. And for me, I've learned to just make things up on the spot very quickly. Only have an hour. There's been times where Chrissia has sent me the music, not to her fault, but she's sent me the music for halftime an hour before rehearsal, and I just got to make it happen. And I'm going in like, okay, listening on the train on the way to rehearsal, like, okay, this is what we could do here, this is what we could do here, this is. And so it's really interesting when people ask to explain the creative process, because for me it's all up here and I
Up
can't really
here.
articulate what's going on up here. I just know I see it and then I do it. And I think something that really has helped me with that muscle and with that tool is Dance 100. That show really prepped me to work on the spot
With on the
and
spot.
come into a room really prepared.
Wow, we're gonna get into Dance 100, y'all. But I know I talked about you guys a million times, but like what you're describing just requires so much of the dancers on the team of being able to learn pretty quickly, like the importance of learning choreography, making last minute adjustments and changes, because like you said, there's like that short amount of time with the artists and you're having to set things. And like it's amazing watching that whole process unfold. That's why I like die to get to court rehearsal because you guys are really guiding the artists, like telling them where to stand. Like, I mean, I watched the, I want to call it the mock performance, whether it's you or Asha, where you guys
Oh
pretend to be the
yeah, when we're
artists and you're
standing
kind
there.
of, and you're kind of like staging everything and showing them where to go. And hopefully they follow direction, but it's just so cool how you kind of coach them and show them how to like move with the choreography, knowing where the, where to stand versus when to walk around. Like, it's a really cool process to watch unfold. And the shout out to the dancers for being able to
They're the
pick
best.
something up in 2.5 seconds. That's crazy.
We're really hard on them. In the best way, in the best way. But yes, it is a lot of pressure to be like, okay, I just got the music, so don't give me no back talk. Let's get to it. Here's like 5, 6, 7, 8. So there's an understanding. It's a really great environment.
I would not survive, but I just love watching how strong and how like nobody takes it personally. It's just like we got a show to put on. Like, let's go. I just think that energy is infectious, except I probably would not, like I said, survive. Now, how do you feel not performing anymore? Like, do you miss it? Like, how did you adjust to, you know, coaching and not wanting to get up out there on the court again?
Yeah, it's so funny. One of my best friends just asked me this last night. I do miss performing, just in general, aside from being on the court, but I do miss performing. I think this year, as assistant coach, I really stepped into that role. And last year, it was really hard, like straddling the line between dancer, coach, choreographer, teacher. And there were a couple times that I did hit the court last year, even as assistant coach.
Oh, say that. What happened?
Sometimes
Tell me
because I
about
was
it.
needed, sometimes I was requested, and sometimes just because I was like, oh, I really like this one, I want to jump in. But I think now what has helped with the adjustment is just the fulfillment that I have from seeing my work on the court or seeing my work anywhere on a stage and being like, I'm getting a lot of fulfillment that way. I don't have to be in it, but seeing it put on other people, seeing it put on other bodies, seeing other people's reactions to the work and just being like, yeah, I did that is fulfilling, you know?
Oh, love it, love it. So you're also a teacher as well. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I teach right now. I'm on faculty at the Steps on Broadway Conservatory in New York, and I also teach here in Brooklyn at a studio called Lotus Creative Academy. I'm on staff at NYCDA. I'm guest faculty there, which is a convention and dance competition. And I teach everywhere. Boss Kids, which is a local dance company as well. And I really do have a passion for teaching because I think dance is the vessel and teaching is the mission for me, if that makes sense. It's like my passion in life. It's my purpose, right? And I think, or helping others is the purpose, and teaching through dance is the vessel. There we go.
I like that.
You know, and so I've really been cultivating my teaching style and my accolades over the last maybe 3 years. So I really love to teach.
So I saw that you are judging an NFL cheerleading audition. Yes. And I just got super excited about that because, you know, there's a differences between like NFL and NBA, but super pumped to hear about any interest that you have in putting some of your routines on NFL teams.
Yeah, I've already done that, actually.
Sorry,
came off so bad. I'm sorry.
No. Yes. Get your stuff together, Regina. Do your research.
Yes, I actually did choreograph. I had the opportunity to choreograph with the Commanders last season. Yeah.
Okay. I might have missed that. My bad. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
It was towards the end of the season. I'm like, I was still pregnant. I think I went in November or one of those months, September or something last year. And it was a really great experience. I felt like right at home, and you know, it was a challenge in my brain for me, like, okay, because NFL teams, dance teams are way bigger than NBA teams, or and they all perform at the same time in their end zones. So it was a challenge to be like, okay, you're going to have 46 dancers in the room, 23 on each side. Come with formations, like you have these type of dancers on this side, this type of dancers on this side. I felt like I was back on Dance on the Train. I was like, great, this is the challenge of the week. Yes. But it was really great to go in there and just own my stuff, you know, and be like, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And the dancers were phenomenal. And they really, you know, welcomed me in and soaked everything that I had to say in. And I'm happy to go back to judge the audition.
Nice. See, this is why I get so salty when there's no, like, with Instagram and not being able to see things like you want to because of copyright issues. I would have loved to see that piece, but so exciting that you're working with that team, and hopefully there will be more teams. Okay, I'm probably like on the edge of my seat because I want to talk about Dance 100. Okay. So I forget technically when this show came out. I just remember you posting about it and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to watch this. Can you describe the setup of the show and kind of the premise of it? And then we'll just, people need to go watch, but just set it up for us. And then I don't care if they didn't watch or not. I'm going to ask some questions.
So the premise of Dance 100, you have 8 choreographers and 100 dancers. The 100 dancers are split between the 8 choreographers, and each week someone goes home. But the catch is that the dancers vote on who goes home. And so at the end of every show, we stand in a line. We as choreographers stand in the line, and the dancers come and stand behind who they would like to stay. And the person with the least dancers standing behind them gets sent home.
Mm-hmm. And so they get these crazy challenges week to week. Mm-hmm. And I think it was something that was kind of more or less given to you in terms of a theme of some sort. Is that right? Or like, how did they select the challenges each week?
I don't know how they selected the challenges, but it was kind of like we knew what was about to come. Like, I knew prop week was about to be prop week. Like,
okay, you know? Okay.
But yeah, they were themed challenges. Like, it was prop week, elevation, and then decades.
Mm-hmm. So it was definitely dramatic. So the dancers were based in
London.
Okay, I couldn't remember. So these are dancers that I would, as a viewer, I was like, I knew they weren't American dancers. It just felt like the vibe was just a little different. And even maybe some of the interviews, but they definitely had a big voice in, you know, the practice process and kind of like the vision of the choreographer, their teaching style, like their vision. Very interesting to hear critiques the opposite way, right? Because you're used to choreographers maybe judging dancers, not the other way around. But you were fascinating to watch. I was just like so excited to see you on the show. What was your favorite part of being part of Dance 100? And then also like, what did you learn the most about yourself? All of the things. I probably asked too many questions at one time. I need to work on that.
Hey, thank you. I get so excited. Thank you for tuning in and thanks for that compliment. I really appreciate it. My favorite part would have to be performing the pieces and like performing it in front of the studio audience. For the camera and then watching the playback, like I just love camera work and choreography and just seeing how everything comes together in production. I love, love, love that. Mm-hmm. So that was really fun for me to see again my work come to life. It's like, I was like a kid in a candy store.
What was your favorite piece that you put together?
My favorite piece was Flap Your Wings by Nelly. Sorry, I was blanking on the name of the song. But my decade piece, my 2000s decade piece, that was my favorite piece to perform. And the one that I put
together. That was a good one.
Thank you.
What did you learn the most about yourself in that process?
So creatively, I learned that I have to step into any space really prepared or somewhat prepared. I can't step into a space unprepared without at least one A count. And if I am stepping into that space without an A count, I need to be vocal about it with who I'm working with and check my vibe. You know, we have to temperature check just to know what expectations are. Just professionally and creatively, that's what I learned from Dance 100. Okay. Personally, I learned that, you know, I don't need validation from anybody else. I think at that point in my life, I was really searching for validation. And I think we all do, right? Especially in the world of social media, instant gratification, we're really looking for others to validate us. And through that, I learned that, like, I don't need that. You know, it's interesting. The week that I was the most confident is the week that I was sent home. And so I think for all of us on that show, once we learned the lessons that we needed to learn, we were kind of kicked to the curb.
Interesting. I definitely was salty when you were eliminated. But I think, you know, there's room for growth. And I like what you're saying about the validation piece, because it's just so true. We're all probably searching for it in some ways, but knowing that we don't need it is really, really key, because you're working with the dancers that probably didn't even really know who you guys were, right? Like, they had no clue what your background is, how significant it is over here. Like, I could see that, like, maybe stepping into the room, at least the dramatics of the show, right? It seemed as though, like, you're coming into the room with these dancers and you're really having to kind of set the tone of who you are, just in terms of the not commanding that respect, but it felt like the dancers were probably coached to be like, these people have to prove something to you because they're trying to be on the show. And that was the vibe I was picking up. And I was like, do they not know they're in the presence of royalty? Like, what are they even giving up? Was it just me?
No, it wasn't just you. And I don't think they were coached. I think that it was very much... It was kind of like an experiment, right? Like a social experiment. You get 100 people together that are used to being judged, like you said, used to being the bottom of the barrel, used to not having a voice, right? Because as dancers, and I'm a dancer too, right? Used to not having the voice on set. So now you flip that script, and of course they're going to walk into a space like, let's see what she got. Mm-hmm. Because they have the power to send her home, you know, and have the persona. So I don't think anybody coached them. I think
it was just the dynamics.
Yeah, the dynamic shift. And yeah, it was a lot of pressure sometimes walking in and having to feel like I had something to prove, but at the same time being like, okay, y'all got to respect me. And then also being like, guys, like, this is just dance. Like, I always say that I'm teacher student or choreographer, dancer, whatever, and I'm never teacher student. Like, it should be this, because we're exchanging energy this way. I'm not looking down on you and you're not looking up at me, you know?
Right.
So that's how I always tried to enter the space until somebody tried me, and then I had to.
Yeah. You have to let them know. It was just a really fascinating show to watch. Again, you know, giving the dancers a voice, it was a flip in the dynamics, but it was beautiful to watch the real creativity come out of each of the choreographers and being able to see from start to finish what that creative process is like. I mean, it's kind of like the same thing you might see with Dancing with the Stars or So You Think You Can Dance, but it was just such a unique element of showing from a choreographer's perspective, like what it takes to do the work that you do. So would you go on the show again?
You used to ask me this all the time. Back then, I would be like, absolutely not. Now I'm like, try me. Yeah, let's go again. Let's take another shot at the $100,000. Let's go.
Well, did they get renewed for another season or no?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. The communication has like kind of stopped from the production studio.
Got you. Well, I would watch it again. And I think, you know, either you guys coming back in like a mentor capacity or something would be really, really cool. So I didn't get to watch everything, but there was a little mini reunion.
There was a Keenan put us together. He's great. He put it together, got us all together because we do have a WhatsApp chat. And he's like, hey guys, you know, we're celebrating 1 year since the show was released. Like, let's get together and answer some questions. And that was fun.
That is so cool. So I'm going to put a link to that so that people can see. And guys, it's on Netflix. Is that right?
Yes.
The show? Okay. Yeah. So everybody needs to go check that out. And I'll put a link to the Instagram chat with you guys with the reunion. Okay. So this is probably the most important part because I'm a mom of two. They're teenagers. They don't need me. They're over me. But Celine, you just gave birth 3 months ago to a wonderful young little fellow that I'm dying to see, you guys. I'm like peeking, so I'm going to see him in the Zoom camera here, named Legacy. I just want to hear all of the things, like from the beginning, finding out you were expecting, what was your thought process? How did you start sorting out, you know, what this would mean in terms of just completely changing your life in the best way, and also just how you manage it all now?
Oh, from the beginning, I found out I was pregnant the day before Mother's Day. I felt like it was a very divine moment in how I found out as well. And it was scary. I'm not going to lie. It was scary. I felt like the show had just come out. I had just started being faculty on this convention. You know, I was getting my career really off the ground. And I felt like my career was starting to peak. You want me to hold you?
Yes, hold him.
Okay. So, he knows. I'm like, yeah, I'm talking about you.
Yeah, exactly. Legacy has entered the chat.
But yes, so that's when I found out. And I was scared because I felt like my career was really starting to take off. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm not ready for a child. I can't handle this right now. Or, you know, oh, how does my partner feel? Because his career is also taking off as well. So how are we going to introduce another life into this? And does my life stop? You know, just personally, I was like, oh my God, my life is going to change. Yes, but is it going to stop? Yeah. And I talked to my mentors, talked to Chrissia and Shanae, who also have lovely children, and our boss ladies. And, you know, the best advice that they gave me was that I could have it all. And like, your life doesn't stop. It changes. And things will shift and change, but you can still do whatever you want to do in regards to, you know, what I was afraid of with my career. My pregnancy was a beautiful pregnancy. I really loved being pregnant. I really did. Everybody's so nice to you.
Right? It's like a very, I loved being pregnant too. It's so weird. I know people are like, oh my God, I can't like get this baby out of me sometimes, but you just feel, it's just such a badge of like, I don't even know how to explain it. The energy that you get from people is just a really beautiful thing. I don't know what it, I felt like I was just a queen walking around, and just, it's just a very positive thing. And I loved your post, by the way, Celine, about, I think it was like all the things that I did while I was pregnant.
Thank you.
Can you talk about that and putting that together and like what you're, loved that.
Like I was saying, you know, during my pregnancy, I had the best pregnancy because I think it motivated me even more. So going from being super scared to now carrying life inside of me, it empowered, like you said, me feeling like a queen, you being in your super feminine energy. And just to get a little personal for a second, like I'm really used to being in my masculine energy all the time, you know, being a go-getter, doing things, just being the doer. And so having to take a step back a little bit physically, you know, really made me embrace my feminine energy and femininity. And it motivated me to stay active. It motivated me to live life because I'm about to have life, you know, and just show everybody that like, just because you're pregnant doesn't mean that you got to sit down and be lazy. Well, I use that term like loosely, but you know, and not have fun and not, you know, have those experiences. I just wanted to pat myself on the back, like, girl, you did that. I stayed active because I wanted to do delivery. I stayed teaching until I couldn't. And, you know, people were like, oh my God, girl, you got to sit down. Oh my gosh, you got to relax. And I was like, I feel great. So I'm going to keep going.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And I love how I'm sitting here rocking like I have the baby. I caught myself. I keep telling people I'm like a baby magnet and I'm up here rocking like she's rocking with her little mouth. Like, she's just so cute. But I think that's such an important message because it is a little intimidating and scary, and the mechanics of trying to figure out what has to shift. And wouldn't you agree, like after the baby's here, especially, like you just, it just kind of sorts itself out. It's not that you don't have to put effort into figuring it out, but it's like parting the Red Sea. Things just move and you just kind of like adjust and pivot around what's most important at the time. And I don't know, it just
I
kind of
mean,
works it out.
we are in the middle of it, my partner and I, right? We're in the middle of the trenches. I will say we are in the trenches right now. We are fresh, it's only 3 months. But in these 3 months, like you said, yes, the things that needed to figure themselves out have figured themselves out. And that's a good reminder for where I'm at right now, because I'm not going to lie, managing everything. A lot of people are telling me that I'm holding it together really well, but I do have my hard days and my hard moments. And sometimes it is really hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, the light is right here,
They're
but
right there, yeah.
like, are we ever going to get out of the trenches? Are we going to get sleep? Being new parents and having a baby, it's not the easiest thing. And I don't think people talk about it enough, but we are finding our way.
Yes. And it's okay to kind of, like you call it, the trenches. And I think the freedom to talk about the difficult parts of it, right? Because it's, people do glorify motherhood a lot, and it is the best job in the world. It's the best thing in the world. But the tough moments are tough. And I totally feel that when I watch you do the things that you're doing, it just makes it even more impactful for me watching, just because I know what it takes to kind of to start those first few months as a new mom. I just applaud you because you're shining in all aspects. I think sometimes when we're trying to do so many things at once, sometimes it might feel like, we're not able to give 100% to one thing, but I just try not to look at it that way. We're one whole human, and we're going to kind of do what we need to do where we need to do it. Like, we don't have to strive for perfection in every little area. If you're needing to lean on people, and that's why I love your boss ladies and just all of the leadership within the Brooklyn Nets, because I see the support for one another. I see the encouragement, and their children are part of the process too, and coming to games. And so it's just encouraging to see, like, that you're part of an organization where motherhood is celebrated in such a big, big way.
For sure. Yeah, I'm really grateful for that.
So awesome. So, because you are an assistant coach, I just want to probably go back to what it is that you really focus on with coaching your dancers. What do you think is like the biggest thing that you want to see in them in terms of growth, and how do you help them reach their full potential as a Brooklynette?
The most important thing for me that a dancer can have is authenticity and individuality. Right. And that's really interesting being on a dance team, because being on a dance team, everybody's uniform, everybody's super clean, everybody's hitting the step. But I think something special that Brooklyn Nets have is their ability to, yes, be clean and dance together as one unit and as a team, but still having their individuality and their authenticity to who they are and to the style that we're doing. And the way that we push that is forcing them to make choices. A lot of the time in my choreography, there's like, okay, you have a choice here, or this is dancer's choice, or just to break the monotony of things. Like I love to play freestyle games because I think freestyle is really important as well. And this is just all obviously in the dancer realm of like the physicality of being a dancer. And actually, these past couple weeks, Asha and I were prepping our dancers for auditions because we're nearing our end of the season. And we love to do exercises where like, okay, everybody go one at a time. Let's give some feedback. Okay, let's have one group go. You guys give feedback to each other. The other group go, same thing. And that's how we really push them. And having to accept that, like, as a coach, sometimes you're not always going to be liked in the moment because we really do push our dancers really hard. I'm okay with that because I know that what I'm doing is helping them grow, not only in this space, but also in other spaces that they will enter. And as people, I think a theme has been that you have to be comfortable having the uncomfortable conversations. And especially in this industry, you're not always going to get along with everyone, but knowing that you have a show to put on and you have work to do. Through that, we all have the same goal. And so, how we get there might be different, but we all have to respect each other.
Yes, for sure. And I don't know if it's a New York thing or not, but I think the communication style is important because, or at least being able, if you're on the receiving end and it seems so cutthroat and just like in your face, there's a lot of sugarcoating, I would say, that's, goes on in our space. And it's great to be positive and put a PC spin on things, but I call this the truth behind the palms, just because sometimes it just is what it is, and it is tough, and it's not pretty, but it's just the truth. And it's just with the goal of, shedding light or really helping somebody. see kind of the issue and what we need to do to fix it. And so I kind of applaud that communication. So I know it's not for everybody, but as long as there's underlying respect, I think
always
just take the message. Just take the message. I want to pick up on what you were saying about just the individuality and how you kind of push dancers to dig in and find that. How would you advise people to kind of dig deep to find that within themselves as a dancer? Because you're so right in this pro space. And I think, if I'm being real, like sometimes that's why in this space, it's not that I get bored with, how do I want to say this? I'm just talking shit. I'm just talking crap about sometimes you just got to say it. I'll just say it. Okay. So in the pro space, like you said, we're very trained to dance as a team, really clean everything. And I sometimes just struggle with feeling like the routines are robbed of that moment of having some individual flair. And for me, it almost looks monotonous and boring at times. And it's not that people aren't hitting the step. It's not that the choreography isn't great. It's just that it all looks, you know, so much the same. It's very one note. There you go. And so sometimes I'm just like, give me more, you know, and I get super excited when I do see some individuality or somebody does a little something extra. Like I freaking live for it. And I wish there was more of that. I see different teams that kind of adopt that. But if you have a dancer, maybe they aren't making the Brooklyn Nets, if that's kind of like their pocket that they feel the most comfortable in. But how would you advise people to dig in and find that way of showing that individuality? Because I think for auditions especially, that's where you stand out, you know, and people might catch, you will catch their eye because you're doing a little something extra with the choreography that's still within the guardrails, but gives somebody something else to look at. Like it makes you stand out and look. So anyway, what would you say to people who, how to dig in and find that extra layer or flip something that makes it a little more interesting to watch?
So nobody is going to do that work for you, right? And I tell dancers all the time that you gotta dance alone. You gotta turn the music on, freestyle by yourself. You have to find your voice first before you know how to apply it to what somebody else is telling you to do, if that makes sense.
Right? Yeah, that does.
You have to know your body, know your style, know how you like to move so that when it comes time to put your flair on something, it's easy to be like, okay, well, this feels good for me. So this is how I'm going to move my neck. And this is how I'm going to flip my hair. I don't have a lot of hair. So I have to really do extra to get my hair out the way. Little things like that, you know.
Yeah.
For me, I'm a tomboy. I always have a tomboy vibe. So I'm always going to add a little stank on something. I'm always going to hit something a little harder, you know? And freestyle, going back to what you said about auditions, is really important because it lets us know who you are. And I think for the Brooklyn Nets, we really, really value that. You know, we're past, great, if you have tricks, amazing. But we're past seeing like, oh, we need to see tricks and we need to see you do. And me personally on the panel, I can tell when somebody has choreographed their freestyle. So now you're telling me you're not comfortable using your own voice. You're much more comfortable with somebody telling you what to do. And so I feel like my answer is really long-winded, but
that's okay. My questions are long-winded, girl. I'm the worst.
A couple of things that help are, you know, locking yourself in your room or just turning some music on and dancing by yourself and finding your own voice. And then learning how to apply that to said choreography without changing what's given to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then taking class. You have to expand your vocabulary. You have to expand your vocabulary so that you, again, can put things in your arsenal that you can now bring into the dance team space, into the choreography that you're performing. Because think about it. If you only read one style of literature, right? So you only read Shakespeare, you probably would only speak in Shakespearean vocabulary, if that makes sense, right? Versus you're reading like a plethora of vocab, like literature and vocabulary. You have so many ways to speak. You know how to speak in front of a crowd. You know how to speak intimately. You know how to whisper. Like, you know how to use your voice in that way. Same thing with dance. You know, you gotta go out and experience everything. I hope that makes sense.
That makes so much sense. And I'm so excited because it's like, I was trying to figure out how do you even explain like the ways of doing that, but that makes so much sense. If that's what will lead to kind of one note wonderland, if you are just only kind of going to probably what you feel the strongest in, like people want to gravitate towards that. But if you kind of round yourself out as a dancer and really push yourself to learn new languages, then you will find different ways of expressing yourself.
Exactly. And I just want to add, because one of my students asked, like, what do you do when you get dancer's block or choreography block? I'm like, I have to go live life. I gotta go to the club. I gotta go, have some fun. You have to experience life. And I think people forget that, art and real life coexist. Like, they're interchangeable. We don't just pull these things out of us. Like, we experience sadness, we experience happiness, we experience a party. And these are the ways that we live through our art. So you have to go out and experience life so that you can inform your art better.
Better. I think Misty Copeland just posted about that very thing, that like, as yes, I mean, I think she was saying, like, as a dancer, in the grind, that, you kind of forget to live, and that will help you express yourself through your art. I hope people pick that up, because I think that is such an important view. And I think because of our grind with our schedule, I just think we don't always make time and space for that kind of growth as a performer. And I just think for people who are entering into audition season, just that challenge of digging a little deeper and finding ways of adding to your arsenal, like you said, because that would explain in my mind, like, why some people are just like, please no on the freestyle. But the freestyle is probably the best way where you can express yourself and not just not having a choreographed freestyle, but just an actual, like, I'm living in this moment. You can tell the difference. I wanted to drop it like it's hot, Selena. Are you ready? Okay, so I know that you had your decade piece, so this might have already been answered, but would you say that you love 90s or 2000s music?
2000s.
2000s. Okay. What's the biggest mistake you see aspiring dancers make?
Not believing in themselves.
Ooh.
Trying to be someone they're not.
It's because people probably look at these bios and everybody who's on the team, you study it. You aspire to be that so much that you almost start morphing into one of the people on the squad. Don't do that. Just, be yourself. Okay. What personality trait has gotten you in the most trouble?
Is this a personality trait? I'm really sassy. And my mouth is really quick. So I think that, like, my quick, smart mouth has gotten me into some trouble.
Okay. I like that, though. I mean,
Yeah, I do too. I'm not losing that.
I like that. Keep it, keep it, keep it. Well, now you're probably both of these because you have a little one, but morning person or night owl?
I'm a morning person.
Morning person?
Yes.
Okay. What is your favorite pizza topping if you like pizza?
I have to pick one.
Oh, give me all. Order your pizza. Which one do you like?
Okay. Sometimes I like a ham and pineapple pizza.
You're a pineapple girl. Okay.
Popular opinion. But then also, I really love all the veggies on my pizza. Olives, green peppers, jalapeno, everything. Onions. Okay.
Oh, all onions too. Everything. Okay. TikTok or Instagram?
Well, for what?
Like, which one do you like for just scrolling and which one do you like for posting content?
Okay. Instagram for posting and TikTok for scrolling and, like, information
tutorial. TikTok University. Okay. What's your favorite emoji that you use the most when you're texting?
The smile with the slow tear. I use that one a lot.
So what does that mean for you?
It's this face for me. it's like the fake smile. Yes, I use that a lot. Sarcastic. Love it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how good of a driver are you?
A 10. Okay. Shoot.
You're a New Yorker. It has to be a 10. If you could travel back in time, what decade would you go to?
Oh, that's hard. Like, even before I was alive? Like,
any decade.
The 70s is what came to my head really quick. 70s, 80s, late 70s, early 80s.
That's the time I would go back to. Like, the music, the vibes, the fashion, like, all of it was just...
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. If you could live in any sitcom, which one would it be?
That's a Raven.
Are you watching all of this Nickelodeon craziness? I don't know if that was on Nickelodeon or not. Yes,
partner and I were just watching last night. I'm on the episode with Drake Bell. That is crazy.
I just cannot. Like, wow. My kids are watching, and I just... There are so many words I can say about that. That is, like, insanity to me.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. Okay. got to get on a bad note. All right, couple more. Describe an experience where you took a huge leap of faith.
Oh my gosh. So many experiences. I'm just saying what comes to mind right away.
Okay.
When I flew to LA for my first audition, I took a big leap of faith. Yeah, I flew. It was my first audition ever, my first call. I flew out for Justin Bieber's tour.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So, yep, navigated LA on my own, went to my first audition, made it to like the second round. But that was a big leap of faith for me.
Wow. Heels or sneakers?
Bold. I can't pick one.
Okay. What's your biggest pet peeve?
lying to my face when you know I know the answer.
Ooh, don't
No.
do
Lying.
Okay, the last one is, what's your favorite holiday?
I'm a Libra, so I'm so indecisive on everything. Okay, I'll give you my top three. Can I give you my top three?
Okay, of course.
In no particular order. Valentine's Day, Halloween, and Christmas.
Okay, there we go. We don't have to pick just one. Well, I'm so thankful for your time. Hi, little legacy. Hi, sugar pea. Celine, this has been a pleasure. I was wanting to talk your ear off the last time I was there for a game, and I'm just so happy that you were open to continuing the conversation.
Thank you so much for allowing me the space to speak and the interest in my process.
Oh, yeah. I've been interested for a very long time. I've always admired you, so I appreciate the time with you, seriously.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the Pro Cheerleading Podcast. You can follow your favorite podcast on social media at Pro Cheerleading Podcast on Instagram, at Pro Cheer Podcast on Twitter. We're on Facebook, on YouTube, and you can support your favorite podcast on Patreon. Until next time, keep your eyes on the sidelines.